Election 2016.
Hello and welcome to today's Election 2016 constituency debate, focusing on Douglas East. Once again, all the candidates standing in this two-seat constituency will, over the course of the next hour, discuss the local and national issues they believe are the most important as they aim to convince the electorate to vote for them. There are eight people hoping to win the votes in Douglas East. What sets each hopeful apart from the rest? Stay tuned and find out. Well, the candidates standing in the constituency are Claire Betterson, who's a nurse, Quinton Gill, who's a social worker, collection manager for the wildlife park, Richard Holsall, he's standing as a candidate for the Manx Labour Party, retiring member for the constituency who's seeking re-election, John Jockin, company director John McBride, retiring member for the constituency seeking re-election, Chris Robertshaw, charity volunteer and campaigner Kat Turner, and teacher Amanda Walker. We shall hear from each of them in turn in just a moment, but first, here's John Moss with an overview of the constituency of Douglas East.
If any constituency epitomises times past in the island, it's Douglas East, the at one time beating heart of the tourism industry. Then that heart got a bypass called Spain. From a distance, the prom looks very fine, curving round, bordered by what we used to be allowed to call boarding houses, lots of them, and tens of thousands of visitors enjoying the entertainments, the beach and just being on holiday. Just sitting on the prom railings was an entertainment in those days as the folk went by. But then those folk were, by modern terms, easily satisfied. They would sleep three to a room and accept meals at set hours. But then there was entertainment in virtually every boarding house, and what was in the sea really didn't matter. Now what remains? The boarding houses are in the main apartments, or if they're still taking visitors, a very different, updated kind of hotel experience. The promenade roadway is lumpy, bumpy, and makes a lot of people grumpy. The sea's still there, a lot cleaner than it once was when we just flushed and forgot. The way from the creamery is still flushed into the centre of the bay. Then there's the beach and the horse trams. Those remain as a reminder of tourism glories past and a source of one of the biggest arguments in Manx politics. Oh, and before we leave tourism, the northern end of the bay and in East Douglas, there's an ugly patch of wasteland that was once summerland. Well, that's the downside. Got it out of the way. What was that infamous description of this part of the capital not so long ago? A few months. Shoddy, wasn't it? Joined TT. There are the sunken gardens, but there's also the promenade sea wall, which has done splendid service for over 100 years, but is facing new challenges from battering waves. So what will occupy the two members of this constituency? Probably parking and the price of private accommodation. Douglas East contains the main shopping street in the island. It contains the Parliament building and the main government offices, the main courthouse, all these things located in Douglas East, though they are the general property of the island. It holds half of the harbour infrastructure. The grandstand's included in its boundaries. The TT is under scrutiny with the Vision 9 affair. If the numbers coming expand, can the island's infrastructure cope? With homestay, there's not nearly the numbers staying in Douglas during TT as there were. This is a gritty constituency where the MHK has to be able to connect with a very disparate electorate from many places. Connecting with those people is a hard task. But I know a group of people who fancy their chances of doing just that.
John Moss. Well, now let's meet that group of people in alphabetical order. They all have a maximum of 90 seconds to speak about whatever they wish. And we shall start with Claire Betterson.
Hi there. Yep. As you said, my name's Claire Betterson. I'm a 32-year-old nurse and I've been working up at Nobles Hospital since moving to the island. I live in the centre of Douglas East and I moved to the island just coming up 9 years ago, having spent every childhood holiday here and absolutely fallen in love with the place. Certainly in Douglas East we have a varied population. It's an extremely diverse constituency and I think that those are only positive things, but we need to make sure that we're representing everyone within the constituency effectively. I'm certainly become frustrated. I feel that the politicians don't always realise really what's going on the ground and what people are facing day to day as challenges, both financially and in terms of just being able to live a good quality of life and really know that their children and their grandchildren are being brought up in a positive situation. I believe that I'm a caring person. I will stand up and really speak out for those people who need it the most and aren't always able to speak for themselves. And I really believe we can improve the situation in our constituency and our island. I'll always be honest. I'll always explain when I don't agree with someone and rationalise all of my decisions openly to ensure we have integrity if I'm elected in the House of Keys. Thank you.
Claire Betterson, thank you. Now we turn to Quinton Gill.
Thank you, Beth. Good evening. In 2008, we are all aware that the world's finances and the Isle of Man suffered equally, has taken a severe downturn. 2016, the election is very much about finances first and foremost. Without a financial sure-footedness from government and without the foundations of a good financial basis, none of the services we all want to see provided will be available. If we carry on spending more than we're earning, as this government has been doing to the tune of £75 million per year, we will soon become bankrupt. That is the stark reality. There is no getting away from that, and we need experienced, independent, committed politicians who understand the system to be able to address that and support the people they represent. With 10 years' experience, I'm the most committed, the most experienced candidate in this election, and I want to use that experience to the benefit of the people of Douglas East.
Quinton Gill, thank you. Now we turn to Richard Halsall.
Hi. Now, I've spent most of my working career at the Cotswold Life Park, and following my education at Ramsey Grammar School, I obtained a first-class honours degree in behavioural science. I'm standing for the Manx Labour Party because I believe that candidates should be upfront about what they believe in. Representing a party is the clearest demonstration of this principle. The reason I've thrown my hat into the ring this year has been a total lack of compassion shown by the current or last administration. 5 years ago, we were told the priority was rebalancing the budget. That was true then, and it's still true now. But in trying to do it, no one bothered to make sure that things that were being imposed were fair. And so predictably, it's those who are least able to pay who've been hit the hardest. I think it's a disgrace that we're living on an island that boasts 30 years of unbroken economic growth, but at the same time, low wages, food banks and fuel poverty are becoming all too common. I agree the economy is important, but I believe the government have lost sight of the fact that the economy is there to serve society, not the other way around. Rather than placing the needs of the community first, focus has been on ensuring that businesses are able to maximise their profits. I realised the hope that was the economy would grow, create more jobs and so provide more tax revenue. But I don't believe that this is an effective strategy. Economic policy should be based on more than austerity, preferential treatment and blind faith. Though a few MHKs have muttered about it, none have offered an alternative vision. And that's what I want to bring to the table.
Richard, thank you. Now we turn to John Jockin.
Thank you, Beth. I'm John Jockin. I'm 56 years of age. I'm married with two children. I've lived in East Douglas for 25 years. In my previous life, I was a postman for 33 years, which time I was chairman and secretary of the CWU Union. I was a trustee of the Isle of Man Pension Scheme. I was the independent member of the Employment Tribunal. I also ran my own business for 12 years with my wife Angela. I also represented Victoria Ward on the council for 4 years, in which time I was on the Pensions and the Housing Committee, and I was also the deputy mayor. In the past year, I've been the MHK for the East Douglas, and I would like my experience to work for you.
John Jockin, thank you. Now we turn to John McBride.
Yes, I'm John McBride. I've lived in East Douglas for quite some time now, really. Well, I was born in East Douglas, left the island and returned and set up home in East Douglas again. I've obviously seen the good times and the bad times. I believe that East Douglas is the gateway to the island. And if the island wants to proceed down the route of growth and much more opulence, we need to look at East Douglas as being the centre of this island. So if we look at Douglas as being the mess that it's in now, we need to obviously get a grip of things. If our island is to go forward, we need to, apart from looking at Douglas, we need to look at the everything that surrounds this, our health, our social security, the way we look after older people, etc. It needs to be a model, because people can no one is going to invest further in the Isle of Man if we don't have at least what people can get in the UK. So we need to get a grip of it, and I think that it's business people who can get a grip of it. I don't think MHKs or government are short-sighted on this. I think they know about it, but it needs business people
John
to be
McBride,
able to...
John McBride, we need to stop you there. Thank you very much. Now we turn to Chris Robertshaw.
Thanks, Beth. The full term of the next administration will be dominated by the need to keep our tax system competitive on the one hand and the need to deliver quality services to the public on the other. In addition to completing the task of the VAT-related rebalancing, the next administration will also have to deal with the accelerating multi-million pound cost of public sector pensions as that fund runs dry. It will also have to deal with the significantly increased health and social care costs. It will realise it cannot go on squeezing expenditure on education. So, where will all the money come from? Economic growth? This matters hugely, but it is totally unreasonable to pretend that it will be sufficient to bridge the gap on its own. It will not. Increase taxation. Do so, and we will undermine economic growth and jobs. Pass further charges on to the public. Well, those on lower and middle incomes are already under real pressure. The truth is that our government is too big, old-fashioned in its thinking, outdated in its structure, and very expensive to run. It must be modernised to both ensure as much funding as possible goes to frontline services, and that service delivery is made much more efficient. I deal with all of this in my manifesto, The Little Book of Government Reform.
Chris Robert Shaw, thank you. Now we turn to Kat Turner.
Hi, thanks very much. I'm a 51-year-old mother of two glorious girls who tell me they're listening into this tonight, although I feel about 91 after all the pavement pounding I've been doing. I had around 30 years in the finance sector, variously in different segments of the industry, as policy advisor to the Financial Supervision Commission at one point and as director of business risk for an international life company. And that was really helpful. It gave me very broad experience across a whole range of different businesses that we have here. I've also written 17 books on financial services, mostly none of them with jokes, and they're all a bit of a snore. They're all about technical issues. Lectured, and I'm on some committees in the UK relating to financial services to keep my knowledge up, my business knowledge up. But in the last few years, I have been in the voluntary sector working for community and environmental organisations campaigning for a better life for people on the island and elsewhere. And that's been a real eye-opener for me. It's been absolutely terrific in many ways. My focus is to try and improve the well-being of the people of the Isle of Man. And to that end, I'm running as an independent Green. There is a Green Party being established at the moment. We understand it won't be registered in time for the election day itself. So I'm running as independent Green with the aim of applying to be endorsed by them in due course. And our focus is on encouraging...
Kat, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much. And finally, Amanda Walker.
Hi, my name is Amanda Walker. I am a 53-year-old teacher, but I'm also a mum and a grandma and a person who lives right in East Douglas. I know that you're going to be bombarded with information from all of the candidates, and it's obviously going to be very difficult to decide who to vote for. I know how busy our lives are. I know that time when the phone rings just as you're trying to cook the tea and it's that person trying to sell you the PPI, trying to tell you that you've been missold PPI, sorry. I will tell you very, very clearly, if you vote for me on September the 22nd, you won't be missold anything. If you take the time to sit down and read my manifesto, which I'm afraid is a rather weighty tome, you will be able to understand that the P's that I will be giving you are passion, pragmatism, political awareness, proactivity and progression. And the I's that I'll have for you are integrity, imagination, intelligence and international awareness. The P's you won't get from me are promises and platitudes. You won't get bland statements as to what I hope I will be able to do. I won't be inert, I won't be ineffective. If you vote for me, you'll be voting for a mum and a grandma who understands the issues that women face on this island, an island that in 1881 gave women the vote, but hasn't given them a voice in recent House of Keys. I want to be that voice. I think that women need stronger representation. The House of Keys is not going to frighten me for one moment. I face 30 teenagers six times most days. So I really don't think it's going to be a problem for me to settle into the routines of the Keys.
Amanda Walker, thank you. So now we've heard from all the candidates. Let's start to explore some of the common themes that appear in your manifestos and find out what you each believe a vote for you would mean for Douglas East and also for the Isle of Man as a whole. John McBride, interestingly, you said in your introduction you believe Douglas East is the gateway to the Isle of Man. You've said it, you think it's the most important constituency on the island, but then talked about the mess that Douglas is in. How do you sort it out?
The way we need to sort it out is to allow people to take some of these areas, which are the likes of the Summerland site, and have them on a 99-year lease at a very, very at a peppercorn rent and try and get these people investing in the island.
Which and, people is particularly?
Well, we've got to attract investment from outside. I don't think we've got people on the island who can invest in this. We need to be attracting people into the island. And that we need to go along with improving the way our employment offer works. We need to we've really got to sort of make the island an attractive place to invest in, and that really is part of the issue. We've got a lot of bomb sites around the place, and that's the first place we need to start. But I think the first place we need to start is restructuring government and really looking at the Lord Lisvain's review and adopting it and beginning to build the picture that we want to achieve.
Chris Robertshaw, just thinking about Douglas East, you clearly agree that it is a very important constituency. You're standing for election here again, even though you don't actually live in or indeed anywhere near the constituency. Why is that?
Well, for the same reason I stood in 2012 and 2011, that it is the most important constituency. I worked in the constituency for nearly 30 years. I know what it means to get it right. We simply have to do it. So,
do you think you got it right last time?
No, because I was involved in, I set up the Douglas Master Plan in order to ensure that that opened the gate for investment. It did. We were making progress, and then unfortunately that progress got lost in a particular siloed department, which you know that I'm very much against. And we mustn't go down that route again. We must, as John says, we must reform government to make sure that these very, very important initiatives don't get lost in departments.
It is hard, though, I think, for people to understand why, when you were in a position where you could push such change forward, that you stepped away from it and you got exasperated with it and you didn't stick with it.
Well, Beth, I think you spent 25 minutes in my last interview with me pursuing that issue, and so did James before you in the 5 minutes.
Because it's what people think, Mr. Robertshaw.
And I have made it clear as to why it's absolutely the wrong way of looking at things. The fact of the matter is that our government is ill-structured. In fact, Guernsey in the last few weeks has completely reorganised itself, as you probably know. Why? Because they recognise executive government in the way that we run it is not actually serving the Parliament, serving the members and serving the people of the Isle of Man. And unfortunately, once a minister gets involved in the government as it is now, it becomes an intoxicating process, and it's very, very difficult to lure them away from it. So this time what I'm saying is, look, I'm taking this important structural change, these reforms, to the people, and I'm asking them to support the important reform issues that exist.
And we'll come to reform more specifically in just a moment. Quinton Gill, you were an MHK for Rushen for 10 years, you lost your seat in 2011, tried to get back into West Douglas in the 2013 by-election, you're now standing for Douglas East. What would you say to those people who might think that you're just desperate for a return to politics wherever you can get in?
I would say they're wrong. I would say that the fact that I stood in the by-election was a reflection of my commitment to serving the public through a political role. I'm a full-time civil servant. I'm prepared to give up that security because I believe that we have to make the political changes. Why am I standing in Douglas East? Because I believe it's the kind of constituency I grew up in. This is the kind of people that I want to represent. Very much not that dissimilar from many people across Rushen, in fact. However, let me just come to the more important point in terms of the national consideration rather than constituent issue. And I would associate myself with some of Chris's comments that we have to change. We've had to change since 2008. The Brown government completely blanked that.
You were in, though, 2008 to 2011. You were in that.
Yes, I was. And that was my clear view at that time, is this is a wake-up call we cannot ignore. And we have ignored it, and we've continued to ignore it for the past 5 years. And as a backbencher, that was my call at that time. I wasn't returned in the general election. The three members who served Rushen have all been ministers. Do I think they've done a good job? there's certainly a mix of ability and a mix of outcome there, but generally, as members of this government, and as Chris was saying, and he was a member of the government, this has been a failing government. This is a government which is depending on dipping into our savings, which will ultimately bankrupt us. So we need structural change, but most of all we need political awareness and political change to fundamentally address the problems that we have been facing and ignoring, but will continue to face. And if we keep ignoring them, by the next general election, the Isle of Man will be even more severely threatened with its limited finances.
Okay, Amanda Walker, have you got that political awareness to make the changes that we've been hearing are so necessary?
I sincerely hope so. I wouldn't be standing if I didn't believe that I did have. Obviously, I have a degree in politics, which I think gives me an awareness of the international sphere and also gives me a degree of awareness of the way local and national politics can operate and some of the ways I believe they should operate. And one of the things I think is most important is that we actually do away with the system that we've only just rearranged, because I do not believe that the way to elect the national government is by fractionalising and dividing the island into 12 separate areas. I would strongly favour a national list, because I think that would give us a much more balanced government where you'd be able to choose. I don't think we need 24. I think probably 15 would be much more adequate. And you choose them from a national list to ensure that you've got a blend of experience, business acumen, people who, women as well, younger people, right across the spectrum, rather than risking just getting a set of broadly similar people, because people are frightened. We live in very challenging, uncertain times, and I really fear that we might end up with 24 businessmen and economists who won't necessarily have the compassion and vision to see the whole big picture. The economy is not the only issue, it's clearly crucial, but it is not the whole story.
John Jockin, do you think you know the whole story, or are you just one of those people who Amanda has just described?
I'm certainly not a businessman or an economist, but I can tell you the past 35 years I've been banging on people's doors for all that time, and I think I know most of the people in East Douglas, and I think it's that touch that got me elected in the first place. I'm certainly in touch with the people, and that's what I'm very, very proud of. And the fact that I've got at least 20 years public service, even unpaid service, I think is what I have to show for it.
Richard Hosell, you've lived in Douglas East for what, about 17 years or so. You believe the makeup of the constituency, with the number of European workers particularly who live there, means that the way the UK handles Brexit is going to be hugely significant. I suppose I've got two questions for you there, I suppose. How engaged have you found the people that fall into that category during your political campaigning so far?
I found it very mixed. Some people are not engaged at all and are here for a short term. Some people have actually moved in. They've been assimilated into the community, into the Manx way of life, and they're thoroughly enjoying it. And I think that they're the people who I think are probably have the strongest views on what they'd like to see happen, far more so than some of the locals. Some of the people who've been there a long time, they are particularly jaded by it. They don't think it can be changed. They're not motivated to do it. I think that some of the more recent people who are new to the island are probably more likely to vote, provided they actually feel part of the community.
So what are you promising them, given the fact that really the Isle of Man is going to have to react to the Brexit decisions?
I promise them nothing. All I say is we're prepared to listen, we're prepared to fight on their behalf. I mean, I don't think anybody can offer them anything. All we can say is try to get the best deal for them possible.
Claire Bettison, what are you offering to your constituents potentially if you get elected?
Actually, picking up on that topic you've just discussed with Richard, some of the people I've come across have actually lived in the constituency for 17 years. Some European nationals never knew they were entitled to vote. And I've actually put about, there's about 40 people where I've actually allowed the information to be provided and made them aware that they actually do have eligibility to vote. And then provided the relevant forms for them to submit. I think that we are failing to engage with a large portion of the electorate, certainly within Douglas East. I can't speak for other areas, but people who are fully integrated in society and are very willing to setting up businesses and really wanting to be part of our local community and are just struggling to find an identity for Douglas East, where there's actually a sort of community spirit. It might happen in a small area within your road, but not in the general population. I think that's something we really need to work towards. From my point of view, I've said to people, you know, certainly I want to listen to people and really understand what's actually affecting them on a day-to-day basis, because I think often the government haven't realised that and people feel like they've been completely disenfranchised from government.
So what is affecting the people of East Douglas?
A whole host of things. I mean, people are aware that the economy is the bigger picture, but certainly that's not the thing that's actually affecting them. It's the things that are being restricted because our economy isn't in as good a position and we're having to dip into reserves. So I think things, the promenade pops up time and again, parking, concerns about healthcare, access to appointments, timely appointments, and you know, it's the day-to-day impact on people's lives that they see. But they are also aware that obviously without a strong economy, we can't manage to provide those things that would seem nice and make life a better for everyone.
You're listening to Manx Radio's Election 2016 Constituency Debate, which today is focusing on Douglas East. We'll be back just after this.
Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Welcome back to Manx Radio's Election 2016 Constituency Debate, today focusing on Douglas East. There are eight candidates. They are Claire Bettison, Quinton Gill, Manx Labour Party candidate Richard Halsall, John Jochen, John McBride, Chris Robertshaw, Kat Turner and Amanda Walker. Kat Turner, I just want to come to you first of all, because I wonder if most people in the Isle of Man feel that they could write a manifesto now. We know what would-be politicians are going to talk about, with the need to grow the economy, protect the vulnerable. What voters really want to know is what you're actually going to do for them. What are you promising in your manifesto? How are you going to be different this time?
Okay, what I'm promising is that is a focus on something other than the tired old, we have 30 years of uninterrupted GDP growth, because ordinary people are not feeling it. GDP growth can be caused by good things and bad things, and negative growth is never a wonderful thing, but you can have falling well-being in an era of rising growth, and that's exactly what we've got. And in particular, we've got rising income inequality. So my key focus is on an economy that prioritises people's well-being instead of just those tired old 1980s metrics of growth and employment, when sometimes that employment is actually underemployment, people hanging on by their fingernails to a couple of part-time jobs. There is good, solid research that what makes for a healthy society, a healthy economy, and happy and healthy people are having enough, which many of our people don't. They're dying the death of a thousand cuts, as we all know. Good health, security, and that means job security as well.
This is, again, though, I'd just interrupt you here and say this is a list of obviously what we want, but how are you going to achieve it?
Okay, we need to start measuring things that we're not measuring now. So it's outrageous that we don't even have a definition of fuel poverty. We need to start measuring the people who are in fuel poverty, the people who are in food poverty, the measure at the rate at which income inequality is rising, and what the causes of that are. Because at the moment, the growth is going into the pockets of shareholders of businesses, and it's largely being shipped offshore to corporate head offices elsewhere. We need to find a way to harness that and go back to the days when workers, frontline workers, had a greater share in the profitability of a company and not a 0 hours rubbish contract.
Quinton Gill?
Well, that's all very well, but it doesn't answer your question. The question was, what would you do to make the change? Not what should we do at some time in the future and why. Then the answer has to be that the first thing after the general election, the very first thing that has to be before the first sitting of Tynwald, is we have to discuss the scope and structure of government, and we have to make some meaningful decisions, and we have to commit to undertaking to following them through, not putting them into the long grass like they have been since it was first initiated in 2006 and reviewed in 2012, but it was never going anywhere. And that's because this government and this Tynwald, and I include the backbenchers around the table, haven't held the government to account. So get that debate undertaken before the next government is formed, ideally, so it's genuinely independent, or party, in Richard's case, views, and that holds the government to its account for the next 5 years. Without that, we might as well forget it. The rest of the froth about what we should do, we do have definitions of fuel poverty, we do have those things, but that doesn't matter because we're not addressing the fundamentals, and the fundamental comes back down to, if we're not earning enough that we like to spend, then we have to do three things. Spend less, earn more, use our savings. At the moment, the reliance is on just keep spending and dipping the savings. It cannot go on.
Chris Robertshaw.
Beth, the problem is pretty fundamental. I've read a lot of what the candidates around this table here have written, and I actually agree with quite a lot of it. The problem is that we can't deliver, which was your question, I think, at the beginning. You can say these things, but can you deliver them? And the listeners in this evening will be perhaps choosing between us as to which policies or which ideas they prefer. In reality, none of us around the table, unless we change and reform government, can actually deliver any of it. Guernsey's just realised this. They've changed the way they're doing things. We've been stuck in this mould now for 25, 30 years. We must get out of it. I deal with this in pretty well in depth in this manifesto of mine, which does not talk about policy because I can't deliver it. What it talks about is a manifesto which enables policies in the future to be delivered.
But it still requires you to bring 23 other people along with you to make it happen, or as many as possible.
Certainly, as I answered you before, I said that the existing system is intoxicating. Executive government for a minister being called the Honourable and getting extra pay and having 1,000 civil servants around them saying yes minister, no minister, is something they don't want to let go. What I'm saying is that if people want to re-engage with politics again, if we want a Tynwald that's properly engaged again, and incredibly, if we want a council of ministers that's actually engaged in the policy formation in the future, because in the last administration it wasn't, then we need that reform. And I need people to say, get back in there and get on with it. And I need other people to say the same. And the first thing we want to do, scope and structure of government is important, but the single legal entity must be dealt with. We are on dangerous ground at the moment if we don't change the way we're running our government.
Claire Bettison.
Yeah, picking up on those points, I think that it's the same as in people's lives. It's the same we see in the pensions. What people want is certainty. We've talked a lot about the changes. We've conducted the inquiry through Lord Lisvain. We have the recommendations. And what we need to do now is commit to taking those on board and saying, let's move forward and let's actually get things happening here. And I think that stands true in most areas of government. We need to get rid of the silo thinking, which has also been picked up by Chris. And I think we really need to see positive movement where we work across all of the departments to get things that are working for the people. I'm not saying that I've got all the absolute answers, and I know that I have to work with people if I am fortunate enough to be elected. We all are aware of that. And I think it's really heartening to see that we are all talking to each other, not just in here, and that goes across other constituencies. I feel that there is a lot of move from new faces and some of the older faces to see us working together and saying, look, this is our island and we want to make this the place that we all want to stay.
Richard Halsall, how would you give people certainty?
Well, it's not a case of being certainty. Listen to people talk about reform government. What they actually mean is privatise, cut back. It means taking a lot of things that people now rely on services out of the hands of the people who can afford them. If you shrink government to the extent that people are wanting to do, yes, it's expensive, but if people can't afford to buy those services, it's the same as user pays. User pays, those who can afford to pay, use. And that's what I mean, these two both say, yes, we want to shape the scope of government, but what do you want to cut? What do you want to take away from people? What services do you want to do away with? Because that's what it comes down to.
Well, I think there's an important point to be made here. Reform does not mean cut. Reform means creating a government which is capable of delivering the services which Richard wants.
But you want a smaller government, though. That does imply cuts.
It does not imply cuts. It means redirecting the funds which are currently sitting in a bureaucratic system. We have 650 people moving data around in a government for 83,000 people. We need more money spent on the front line for teachers and nurses. It's redirecting money. Reform is redirecting money, not necessarily, as you've said, making smaller government and cuts. It's making a government efficient and delivering services that people want.
John Jockin?
I think there's nobody around this table that doesn't want a smaller government, and I mean a government, not a workforce. The problem is with this government, if it wants to kickstart the economy, it's got half of its employers on part-time contracts, they've gone 20 or 15 hour contracts, they're working 50 hours a week, they can't even buy a washing machine on HP because they're working, they've only got a 15 hour contract, they won't get any credit at all, and they can't buy a house, they can't buy a car, and that's what's stopping the economy being kickstarted. And I'm sure Richard will agree with me. If you look at all the employment contracts, the worst employer of the lot is the government.
Look, I need to make an important point here. We have a huge burden coming forward on pensions, public sector pensions. On top of that, we have two more tsunamis, a social care tsunami cost and a health cost, and we have to find the money for that. And unless we reform government, we will be in dire straits in a number of years.
You said we reform government, but not the workforce, Chris. We're talking about the government. Everybody agrees the government should be smaller. Everybody's got it in their manifesto. I'm talking about the workforce. I'm talking about the 6,000 people that you employ that can't buy anything.
John McBride, your thoughts on this?
Yes, well, this goes far beyond government, really. If we've got a workforce which is on 15-hour contracts within government, I mean that is filtering right down to the retail sector, to most businesses these days. We're getting to the stage where a lot of people are on very low, either 0 hours or 15-hour contracts. They can't afford to take holidays. They can't afford to do anything. As John Jockin said, they can't afford to buy a washing machine on credit. And unless we can address this throughout the whole of the island, we're going to have to, we're looking at the possibility of having to bring in a universal basic income.
This is the whole point, though, isn't it? Is that we talk about how bad things are for certain people and the potential destruction that we're all facing, but what are you going to do about it? What are you promising to do about it if you are elected?
Well, it all begins with the reformation of government, unfortunately.
Agreed.
Keep going back to this.
Yeah. And Richard Hulse, or you don't agree?
I'm not going to achieve anything.
I think the first thing to reform is our tax base. I mean, a lot of our taxes are based on a false assumption that people are motivated by money. They're not. People are motivated by quality of life. And unless if we raise taxes, there will not be a tax flight. That's a myth of tax flight. The US states have tried it between various states that have introduced a higher rate of state tax. There has not been a mass migration of wealth out of those states. People stay who with money are embedded in their society as anybody without money. In fact, people who with no money are far more likely to move because of tax reasons than the wealthy.
Amanda Walker, can I just bring Amanda in here?
Right. I think, obviously, there is general and consistent agreement that we do need to shrink the size and scale of government. However, I'm not sure that that is the number one priority day one. To me, the number one priority day one is to actually set an agenda for change and to actually set out the policies we wish to achieve and to give the electorate the reality that this could be a government that isn't entirely stage managed by the civil service, but is rather a government that is by the people, putting the people first, prioritising what ordinary people want to achieve and using a zero-based budget rather than going back to historic budgets and making sure that we can actually deliver frontline services and that we do that by having positive, progressive policies rather than going around like chicken licking saying the sky is about to fall in, Armageddon is about to happen, it will be like 1929, we'll talk ourselves into a crisis. Interest rates are incredibly low at the moment. Why have a massive reserve sitting there when you could be using our national assets to stimulate growth and to make sure that we move forward. Well, government employees are not pariahs. Government employees have worked hard for their money. The government pension scheme has been based on people being given a scheme. Many people who are highly skilled work in government. People who have given their life to public service could have earned far more in the private sector. They bought into a pension scheme in good faith. That can't be wiped away overnight. It has to be honoured, and we have to make sure that we look after the people in government. We develop and we make sure that we're not just scrapping people and adding them onto unemployment.
You
statistics.
Have to find the money to keep providing that service.
And you have to find that money, but I would entirely agree with a far fairer taxation system. I do not believe that if we increased the taxes on our people who have got vast reserves, that they would immediately leave the Isle of Man, because we could still have an attractive taxation system. It could be slightly less attractive that would generate a significant amount of growth.
Kat Turner, you agree?
That's absolutely right. There's plenty of evidence that a small increase on the wealthy does not generate a mass migration. Certainly those who can bear more should. In terms of saving money within our finances, one of the things that we really need to look at is government's procurement policies so that we avoid the conflicts of interest and vanity projects that end up with us spending millions of taxpayers' money on things that do not serve us well and are over capacity. We do need to look at ways of redistributing income, because this is not a nice to have, it's not a let's look after the poor and so forth. The fact of the matter is that we all do better when we all do better. If the very wealthy have more income, much of that gets saved. It doesn't go straight back into the economy. If you give the poor and the medium income folks more money, they will spend it.
Okay, I just want to go back to Richard's point that he made about the tax and just get a general feeling on this, because Chris Robertshaw, a fairer taxation system is needed?
What's needed, the first thing we need to do is to create a government that's efficient, focused on services and cost effective. We haven't got it.
Where do you stand on the tax issue?
I very firmly stand on the issue that the first thing to do is to get government efficient and productive. And
where do you stand on the tax issue?
I'm telling you, and not raising taxes in order to support a government which needs reform.
Quintin Gill, where do you stand on the tax issue?
Our tax rates are not set in stone, and we can vary them. I take the point, but frankly, it's missing the big point to say that we need to maintain this government structure at all costs, and we just keep throwing our reserves at it, and we'll have nobody around the table has claimed, and they cannot claim, that we can make good the VAT shortfall by introducing more taxes.
John Jockham?
It would be crippling to do that. And to say that that we cannot make any changes to government without there being cuts is frankly disingenuous. I'd like to hear anybody who's making that claim explain how that trick can be undertaken.
We can still have the low tax status. We can still have that. We're talking about reforming government as a separate thing, but reforming government is not going to fund the shortfall. We need a low tax system because that's why people come here.
Mr. Robert Shaw, Quinton Gill said that a smaller government wasn't going to be without cuts, which is not what you were saying earlier.
What I was saying was that the way government is formed at the moment is it's top heavy. The expenses on the centre of government, and we've got to redefine it so that the government, that the funding goes to frontline services where the demand and challenge is going to be. And that, to achieve that, requires the most fundamental reform process.
And that fundamental reform starts with, what is a government for? It's there to serve the people. Absolutely. And if we know what it's for and where we're trying to get the lives of our people to, then we can set out a 5 or 10 year roadmap.
It's cutting at the wrong end. It's cutting the costs at the wrong end. It's cutting it at the workforce, the most vulnerable, the pensioners and everything else that goes with it. They're not reforming themselves. They're just ignoring it.
We're talking an awful lot about tax. I think what we actually need is a complete review, integrated review of tax, benefits and the means testing access to various services. So it needs to be holistic so that we can make sure the limited amount of money we've got goes where it needs to go, but the people who can contribute more than they do also do that.
Well, means testing is different from the base tax increases,
and I
have said in my manifesto that I'm comfortable with means testing, and in fact needs testing is also a further way of redefining how money is spent efficiently. There's an awful lot that can be done.
Claire Betterson, what do you think about means testing?
I think that there's a fine line to be crossed. Actually, I've spoken to two people just in the last day who would be better off because of the way the structure of the taxation system is, and with the means testing of various benefits, they'd actually be better off just giving up work altogether and just claiming benefits. I just think that's a very dangerous position for the government to be in, because we ultimately rely on people putting into the system in order for people to be able to take out. If we force people who can afford to work to take out rather than put in, we are really in a very slippery slope.
That makes the assumption that we're talking here specifically about benefits, and I didn't say that. Means testing.
It's too costly to implement.
For example, prescription charges cost the Isle of Man government £20 million at the moment each year. We recover £1 million, and yet people like me, just because I'm of a particular age, do not pay for prescription charges. Now, that's ridiculous. There's an opportunity there, without upsetting anybody, to ensure that there's more funding going to the health service. Nothing to do with benefits.
May I say, one thing that we haven't talked about in boosting the economy is that we need also to see more enlightened localism. And by that, I don't mean uninventing all the fun stuff that's imported from elsewhere. What I mean is a focus on supporting local businesses where the funds are kept within the economy, circulating within this economy, rather than shipped off to a head office elsewhere. And particularly within small and medium-sized businesses with resilience, where we're all dealing with one another. So I think we really need to put a focus on how we keep money within this economy doing good for our people.
You know, when people are choosing their preferred candidate, they really want to know that the person they choose is going to adequately reflect their view on certain issues. And some of those tend to be quite contentious. And we've broadly dealt with the economic issues. I just want to ask you about a few points that people might want to know your views on. Something several of you have picked up in your manifesto, something I imagine is going to come before the next House, is the Isle of Man abortions law. Chris Robert Shaw, if you're elected and have to decide whether the island's laws should be changed, how would you vote?
Very clearly, this is an issue not about politics, about conscience, and I will wish to retain the abortion laws as they stand now.
John McBride, how would you vote?
I would like to see a change in the abortion laws, not necessarily to match the United Kingdom, but I would like to see it easier, because I don't feel that women are getting a fair deal. I mean, it's very dangerous sending people across to the UK for abortions, and I think we should be keeping them in house.
John Jockin?
It's quite simple with me. I believe with equality in everything, whether it be sex, race or gender, and if they want equality. What I would like to see, if we're going to have the law changed, I'd like to see more counselling for the women. It's bad enough what they have to go through.
Richard Halsall?
I support CALM. I think it's a healthcare issue more than anything else. And I think that I approach from that, it's, as John says, it's about equality in healthcare.
Quinton Gill?
we're not here as delegates to represent the populist clamour. We're here as representatives, and that's an important consideration. As a representative of all the people on the Isle of Man, I believe that the campaign for abortion law modernisation is entirely sensible, in that they're asking for modern, fit-for-purpose legislation. Now, I don't know what that will look like at the end of it, but it's an entirely reasonable claim, and I would support it wholeheartedly.
Claire Bettison.
I've listened to both sides of the debate with interest. I personally believe that it's very clear for me, if we're going to have change to our abortion legislation, which I do feel we need, it should be something that women are able to talk about and discuss their options. Once they have come to an option fully informed, by enabling that, I would allow people to have an abortion and to have that safe and supported.
Very quickly, Kat Turner.
I'm in favour of modernising abortion law so that people can get access, if they need it, to abortions here on the island.
And Amanda?
I would be in favour of reform. I would be in favour of informed debate about it. But I would also want to ensure that those young people, particularly who find themselves in that position, would have adequate support, so it's not a choice they have to make on the grounds of economy.
We are approaching the end of this constituency debate. We've been hearing from the people standing in the constituency of Douglas East. To finish, let's hear from each candidate summing up why they deserve one of the electorate's two votes on September the 22nd. We'll do this in reverse alphabetical order, so start with Amanda Walker.
Right, I believe on September the 22nd you have a genuine choice. You've got a huge choice at East Douglas. I ask you to sit down and read the manifestos carefully. Think about the people that you have met on the doorstep. We can't get round. I certainly can't get round everywhere because I work full time. I have tried to reach out. Stability and experience are good if that stability and experience has brought progress and benefits. If you think not, give me a choice to make a change.
Kat Turner.
Yep. I believe that we need to fight for a government that knows where it's going and what it's for. People within that government who have the wit and ability to negotiate the choppy waters ahead of us with Brexit and the like, and people who prioritise the well-being of their people.
Very quickly, Chris Robertshaw.
No jurisdiction in the world, no jurisdiction has managed to balance off low taxation with high quality service delivery. We've got to find a way forward. It's urgent and we must get on with it.
John McBride.
Right. My first is an apology. I won't possibly get round to everybody due to a spinal injury, but I will be certainly making every effort. Please, I promise I'll be there for you.
John
Please
Jockin?
Vote for me.
Yes, thank you. Well, when I stood last time, I said I was delivering a fresh approach is what I wanted to do. I wanted to connect with the people. I didn't want to play to the gallery. I don't want to dodge the big issues. I wanted a voice for their vote. And if you vote for me, I will be your voice for East Douglas.
Richard Hazel.
Making the island a fairer place, just what happened by itself. Someone's got to be prepared to fight for it. I want what's right, but equally prepared. I'm equally prepared to compromise and work with other people.
Quentin Gill.
If you want to carry on the way we are carrying on, a failing system, there are plenty of candidates in Douglas East who will provide that. If you want to change, a fundamental change, you'd have to vote for somebody like myself.
And finally, Claire Bettison.
I'd like to champion the ordinary people, ask the difficult questions and report back regularly to constituents.
Well, thank you to all the candidates for joining us for today's election 2016 constituency debate. We have been hearing from the candidates standing in Douglas East. Tomorrow, Roger Watterson will be talking to those standing in Douglas North. You can keep up to date with all the election news by clicking on the election section of the Manx Radio website. Until next time, goodbye.